Welcome. It's good to feel that nobody's waiting for anything to happen, since everybody here is an advanced practitioner of presence. However, it is miraculous to be in that state of not waiting for the next thing to happen. It's always miraculous. And the deep-seated mental habit of waiting for the next thing to happen may still occasionally come up from within you as impatience, restlessness, get on with it, what's he waiting for? We're wasting time. We have a lot to get through. We only have a day and a half. But the good thing is we don't have anything to get through. The central core of this gathering, a gathering of friends, is, one could say, to deepen the state of presence, but language is so limited, it's never entirely true what one says about it. Presence is already deep. Another way of putting it, we are here to recognize the inner space that's already as deep as it can be. And to recognize that there are basically two dimensions, one could say, in life, in your life. And that's space and things in space. Now things, I'm using that in a wider sense than the conventional sense of the word objects. That's also things. But every thought is a thing. Every emotion is a thing. Not quite as clearly defined in form as a physical thing. And yet, it has form. It's an energetic form, every thought, every feeling, every emotion. Sense perception, even a sense perception is something that arises, a form that arises within you. Because the entire room arises within you. The perception of this room, the auditory perception of the voice, the visual perception is happening, one could say, within you. Certain sense data are being transmitted via the nerves as impulses. They reach the brain in some strange way, and then they're reassembled in some strange way that nobody completely understands. And then you get this image of this room in which you are sitting, listening to somebody. Nobody really knows whether there's anything out there at all. Because to you it's all within. So all these things arise within you, and then thoughts come as you sit there. All these things, things. So the world consists of things, forms. And that to most people is the all there is. That's what they identify with, certain forms. They identify with every thought that arises, every emotion that comes. They are that. Every thought is there, completely captured by the thought that arises. That implies that they believe in every thought completely. It's madness, of course. They believe that a thought could tell you what's real, can express some ultimate truth. This is how it is, how he is, how she is, how they are. So that's to be absorbed in things. To lose yourself in things. Many people in advanced countries, so-called, obviously, on one level, everybody can see that they are lost in things because they're so concerned about things, material things, things that happen or don't happen, and then come the inner the thoughts, the emotions, and everything is draws people in. This things become invested with a sense of self, especially thoughts and emotions. And then when you identify with something, that means you're seeking a self in it. You identify with a possession. The possession in itself is nothing. The thought form that arises is important to you because it's invested with me and my. So most people's lives are absorbed by things in a wider sense. And you can see it, there's no ease. They're never at rest because their life consists of one damn thing after another. And things never leave you alone. And for a moment, perhaps it happens, and then the next thing comes up and demands your attention or provokes you into identifying with it. It could be a thought that arises from within you or something that comes at you from someone else or some situation. And the world and the human mind, yes, it's there to provoke you, to try. Come on. You know what you see in films, I have not much personal experience with it, but in films when you see people want to fight, they go, come on, come on. And in a way, that's what the world does to you. Come on, let's have a fight. Take me seriously. So easy to be lost in that. I sometimes call it object consciousness. Every thought, the entire stream of thinking, the human mind, is one object after another. Sense perceptions, thoughts, emotions, object consciousness. One comes after another. I must think about this. Oh, what's that? Reaction. Consumed by that. Not realizing that there's a dimension in you that is vast, spacious, in which, yes, these objects float around. And for some people, the first glimpse they have of that is when somehow the world went too far, provoked them too much, and they just can't keep up anymore with reacting, and they say, I give up. That's how it is. It's all collapsed. And that's how it is. The first taste of surrender to what is, which to many people come when they can't stand what is anymore. The pressure of pain gets too much. They can't stand themselves anymore because what they think of as themselves is a bundle of thought forms and emotions, objects, content of your mind, identifying with the content of your mind as a me. And I can't stand the content of your mind and my mind anymore. It's torture, which means I can't carry the burden of myself anymore, the burden of self. I can't, it's heavier, it gets heavier and more painful. And then comes a point where you get the first glimpse of, I can't fight it anymore. Can't fight what is, so I might as well accept what is. Accept this moment. Oh. And suddenly, there's space. The simple thing of accepting what is now, suddenly there's a space around that which you accept. Before there was no space around it. Well, there was, but you didn't realize it. There was no space around events, no space around sense perceptions, no space around reactions, no space around thoughts, crammed full with objects. And suddenly when you surrender to what is, there's a sense of depth in you. There's the event, whatever object there is, the thought, the emotion, anger, sadness, the story in the head about me and my life. All right. And there's space around it suddenly. So the simple acceptance of the isness of this. And that's often through pain. Many of you had your first glimpses through suffering, couldn't stand yourself anymore. and perhaps didn't even realize what happened inside you. And then you heard a teaching, a spiritual teaching came perhaps, pointed to it also. Oh. Yes, we could also call it stillness. The cessation of being absorbed by objects. And so you become who you always were but didn't realize it. You become the space, the stillness, not that which happens, that which underlies what happens always. And then you meet. One day it happens that you meet someone, you come to an encounter, a human encounter, and you are meeting that person in not as a bundle of thought forms, a me that wants something or fears something, but as still spacious presence. You're meeting another human being in that state of openness that is just spacious presence, where they're simply looking, listening. Stillness. And that means you have become a teacher in a wider sense than the conventional sense of the word. What the Course in Miracles calls a teacher of God. What we could call here a teacher of space. And of course, usually teaching means you're adding something to the other person. Facts, information, knowledge, but you're not adding anything. So it's teaching in a different from the conventional sense. Something, one could almost say, transmits itself in that encounter. There is the arising of a unifying field of aware presence, a still aware field. And that I say unifying, because when you met humans through the thinking mind, which immediately labels, judges, compares myself with them, expects something, demands something, fears something, wants something, you're not really meeting anybody. You're just creating the barriers of conceptual thought are there between you and that human being. And the other person does it to you. So you become a teacher of presence the moment you meet someone in stillness. Not the stillness that is below thought, that you sometimes find when you drift off towards sleep. And the mind gradually stops, only to start up again the moment you start dreaming. But it happens too that people experience a little bit of peace when they drift below thought towards sleep. They've been tortured all day long thinking about their problems. And then you become peaceful as you drift towards sleep. But that's not where we are going, although it could happen to one or two of you. The stillness is not the stillness that is the stillness of the flower, or the stillness of a flower is beautiful for the flower. The stillness of a tree, the stillness of an animal is beautiful for the tree, for the animal, and has a deep connection with the stillness that arises in you as you go beyond thought, in which there's no loss of consciousness. There's a great awareness, an alertness, a wakefulness in that stillness. And that is how you meet the other human being. This is where listening becomes so important, to listen, because mostly when you meet another human being, they'll be speaking. Because human interactions are almost completely dominated by words. So almost always when you meet somebody, they'll be saying something. And now let's just assume for a moment they're not provocative. They're not demanding an emotional reaction from you, which also happens a lot. They're just saying something. This needs to be discussed. We need to talk about this. This is the matter, and that's the matter, and some other matter. And you are listening without getting drawn into the mind stream, which is object consciousness. You are there as space consciousness, spacious awareness. And that space that arises somehow is not confined to this form. There is a spaciousness that contains the entire interaction when you meet someone like that. The entire interaction, there's suddenly space in it, even though the other person may not notice it as space, may not perhaps notice it at all at first, because the mind stream may be so overpowering that they are totally in the grip of it, because they are talking to you something that really we need to deal with this now. This is quite normal state. Some people live like that continuously. Next thing, and the next thing. An entire civilization run with that energy. And what a grace if somebody comes in and embodies space, spaciousness. And there's somebody who is trapped in object consciousness. At first they may not notice anything, but it does. Little miracles you will see begin to happen around you as you begin to teach. Not formally, or informally. Any encounter. That's how every encounter, as Course in Miracles puts it, is a holy encounter. Potentially, this is not in actuality. Encounters are not holy. They have the potential of being holy. Most human encounters are totally dominated by mind. And even if two priests meet, they'll be totally dominated by object consciousness. And they'll be talking about God. And there will be nothing holy about it, because it's concepts. But the moment that you are there as space, then a deeper dimension opens up. And that is why we're here, to recognize that, to see that, to be that. And yes, some of the things that are going to be said here are almost paradoxical, because we're using language that every word comes from object, the world of object consciousness. It's almost impossible to talk about space consciousness because words are object consciousness. So it's inevitable that paradoxes will come in when we talk about it, and then the mind might say, no, that can't be right. No, of course it's not right. The words, you need to have a lot of tolerance for words here. When words are used as pointers, not as explanations or as the ultimate truth, simply pointers, they point beyond themselves when they are used in true spiritual discourse. Not a new philosophy, not an explanation, not the ultimate truth, not something to believe in, more object consciousness. No, just pointer. So be, please, tolerant. Have space around what you listen also, instead of getting in there and hanging on to a string of words and say, no, I don't agree with that, that can't be right. You're right, it's not right. It's only an approximation to the truth, a distant approximation to the truth. It points to it. The famous Buddhist saying, the finger pointing to the moon. And you know, and then you look at the finger. Dogs do that because they're not at home in the conceptual universe. When you, the dogs will look at your finger. When dog owners don't never learn that, they say, they go to their dog and say, it's there, and the dog looks, of course, at your finger. And some people have had dogs for 10 years and they're still doing it. So we are here to be. Every word I say is wrong, but it's just to learn to be that which you already are completely, to learn to be that more fully. And you don't need time for that. How can I learn to be it if I don't need time? I can't learn anything without time, says the mind. But that's the miracle. That's what's happening here. So words are wonderful wisdom. The first line of the Tao Te Ching, which in my free translation reads, if you can talk about it, that's not it. In more conventional translations, the Tao that can be spoken of is not the true Tao. That is a deep truth, and that has to be said at the beginning. So important. That is the first statement. And that you need to remember throughout. And then he continued to talk about it. So we are here to, when you see how inadequate words are, you almost want to shut up. And I'm not going to say anything anymore because it's all wrong. Well, I'll say a little bit more. Now, to realize that inner spaciousness, or just let's just say spaciousness, that is already your essential reality fully. So you cannot add to spaciousness. Because whatever you add to spaciousness will be an object. And even to say, I need to become more spacious isn't quite right. Because you're already as spacious and as deep as can be. It's simply to see, to realize who you already are, or what you already are, or that which you already are in the depths of your being. And of course, as a bundle of content, a content in your mind, which for many people is still their identity, and which you also still have, even though you realize the deeper dimension of space, there is still the content of your mind. It doesn't become totally eradicated all at once. It's the content of your mind is still there, but it's recognized as content. So it doesn't absorb your sense of self into it. Then the content of your mind becomes heavy and problematic. Without having your sense of self in it, the content of your mind is just the content of your mind. And on the level of content, your life is always will have loose ends, will have things that go well here and something you gain here but something else you lose there. There's always the coming and going of things. There's never a final happy ending on the level of content. It can't be, because things continuously come and go. So to look for some kind of working out of your life on the level of content is futile. All you can do, the best you can do, is to do your best to play with it. Yes, honor it, because that also it is to be honored for what it is. Things are to be honored for what they are, and things in the wider sense, but starting with objects, they also can be honored for what they are. And every object has beingness, has certain presence. When you truly give it attention, then you can notice that it has being also. And you honor that, but that's the object without seeking yourself in it. You become obsessed with objects when you seek self in objects. Then you become obsessed with possessions and whatever the objects might enhance your sense of self. So to honor the world of object consciousness, even to honor your emotions, of course, also to see them for what they are, an energy movement, not a personal me problem, a human emotion, nothing personal, an emotion. And if you that's fine, and then you see it and there's space around it, but you're not looking for some kind of ultimate perfection working out, or some limitless state in the world of objects. I'm looking for the ideal place to live, the ideal climate, the ideal partner and job and car and my ideal status in the world, so that everybody recognizes how great I am. Arrange the world of things in such a way that it's completely satisfying to me and fulfills me and makes me happy. It doesn't work. You can honor it, yes, but not to seek that which it can never give you. And see that you already are completely and fully yourself, without needing to add anything. You can add, it's a game, no more. You learn a new language. It's a game. Are you going to have a greater sense of self through it? No, maybe a greater ego if you identify with acquired knowledge. Now you speak three languages, whereas he only speaks one language. So you can add, and that gives you the ego a little boost, a satisfaction. I've mastered another language. I've mastered this and mastered that. And it doesn't satisfy for long. And so, as you teach, you're also not trying to sort out somebody else's life on the level of objects, on the level of things. I'm going to sort out your life. Then this is, especially as you begin to teach formally, more formally, when you say, okay, somebody comes to you for a counseling session, or you give a talk, rather than teaching informally without any structure, just meeting someone. That's how I taught for years, meeting people on park benches, in little cafes, and then I didn't know it was called teaching, so it wasn't really teaching, until somebody, unfortunately, said, "You are a spiritual teacher." And somebody else said, "Who are you?" I said, "I don't know. It's good to know, not to know who you are, because whatever you know is an object in your consciousness." So as you meet people more formally, teaching, that very structure can become a hindrance, because the structure is already a limitation to it. That applies to every structure. And that limitation then can be inside you also, because then there comes the feeling, okay, I need to teach. And you'll notice something strange inside you. There are two things to be aware of that are dangerous. One is the feeling that I'm not ready to teach. I don't know enough. I'm not quite there yet. I'm not ready to teach. Not yet. I'm not ready to see people. Not yet. Not quite. That's one danger. The other danger is to feel I'm finally ready to teach. And then you could become like sometimes those people one meets, and don't feel offended if you did it once or twice. People one meets, and so you meet someone and they say, "Oh, there's obviously something wrong with you, because by the way you walk and hold your body, there's a lot of obstruction there, I can see. Let me just sit down here. I'll manipulate your spine or do whatever they do. Or I'm a healer, just sit." Or somebody who wants to give the things, now they have found the truth and they are so enthusiastic, now they want to tell it to you. That's how it, there's only the present moment. Why don't you believe that? And then you might teach, you get into arguments when you teach. You're completely wrong. Let me tell you how it is. So it's dangerous to feel that you are ready to teach. It's the ego, hidden very often. And the other polarity, I'm not ready is also the ego hidden underneath. And so the truth of it is, of course, in a deeper sense, you're not ready, nor do you need to be ready. Because when you say, I'm not ready, you're really referring to the content of your mind. You're still identifying with the content of your mind, and you say, this content is not quite enough yet. I need just a few more workshops, maybe we'll do it. There's something still that I haven't quite understood, and it's called the secret of the universe. I'm still working on it. But when I have that, then I will start teaching. So the truth is, you're never really ready to teach, nor do you need to be ready to teach, because you are not teaching. It's not you, not you as the accumulated content of your mind is teaching. Space is already in you. Nothing needs to be added to it. Space is already the essence of who you are. Spaciousness, stillness, whatever pointer works best for you. Pure consciousness, a little bit more abstract pointer. Dangerous. The more abstract they get, the more dangerous they are. Because you can then start to believe in pure consciousness. Space is a little bit better. I can't do very much with that. And even better is the Buddhists, emptiness. Can't do anything with that. And that is already fully in you. You don't need all you need is to recognize that it's already there. How do I recognize? Surely I need time to realize myself as emptiness. No, time is the one thing that stops you from realizing yourself as emptiness. That's all. The one thing that you thought you needed is the one thing that stops you. And so comes the beauty of renouncing. There's a lot of talk about renunciation in spiritual circles, and usually that you renounce possessions, you renounce food or certain kinds of food, you renounce sex, you renounce status, although there's a lot of status in being a renunciate, at least in some parts of the world, maybe not in New York, but... If you go to India, you can see how much status you have. If you just dress in yellow robes or nothing at all and don't shave anymore, and immediately you have high status. Not in the West, of course. You have to do something else for status. But you have very high status in India because there's an ancient tradition of honoring and respecting the spiritual. And there are many imposters, there are many jewels in India too, true beings, and there are many who make a living out of playing the role of renunciate, and they get their food. That's how it works. So, renunciation, there are many kinds, but the ultimate renunciation is, one could say, you renounce time. And so then future loses a lot of its importance because you're not looking for yourself anymore in that dimension for future. Then there's immediately an opening into space when you renounce time. Oh. One could also say, and that's just another way of putting it, they go together, they're one. And don't be afraid when I say it. Renounce thought. And because by renounce, they're one, because time is no more than a thought form. Past and future is what time is, and past and future are thought forms. Nobody has ever met past and future except as a thought form. A memory, you remember, but you need the now to remember it. A mental projection of something's going to happen, but only can project it now. So there are thought forms. So thought itself and time are really one. To renounce thought is to realize how deep you are beyond thought, how spacious, how still. And that's all that's required to be an effective teacher, to use a very limiting term, is that. And it is good to feel that you are not ready. But need to add a little bit more here. It is good to feel that you are not ready, and then that becomes great power, but you need, I haven't added the little bit here, to feel that you are not ready and become comfortable with that. Completely accept your non-readiness. And you're not knowing the answers. In fact, the more you go into not knowing, the deeper the space that opens up, and that's only language that's already deep. The more you go into not knowing, the deeper you become. Well, you're already deep, but... And so there's such beauty in then meeting another human being, let's say in a more formal teaching situation, you're supposed to give a talk. What are you going to talk about? Well, I have my agenda here. Point, 7 points towards this or that. 14 steps to full enlightenment. We'll get through that this weekend. But with no, then of course it's all object consciousness. You're feeding. And people will sometimes find it satisfying because you've fed them all through the weekend information and things to remember and feel good about. And sometimes they even get a folder to take home with full of things. It's really been a great weekend. So there are many people who teach like that, and they do on their own level, whoever comes to them is drawn to who is right for them at that time. And so there are people who teach you, they may teach you theoretical Buddhism, and that may have its place. You may not be ready for more than theoretical Buddhism. Maybe you haven't suffered enough. All I'm ready for is theology. Give me the theory. Something to believe in, to identify with. I'm a Buddhist. What about you? I'm a Christian. You got it all wrong. maybe not quite as obvious. You say, well, we Buddhists respect all traditions. You also have the truth in your own way, and one day you will become a Buddhist also. The beauty there is in not knowing. Informal teaching situations and become comfortable with it. Like a little child. Become comfortable with not knowing what's going to be said next, instead of preparing what you are going to think you should be saying next. Or looking through the archives in your mind for some kind of relevant thing to say to this person, to help them, make them feel better, or to teach the truth. And instead, be there as space. And space doesn't know anything. And then see what happens. There may not even be any words. But that state of not knowing is already a state of powerful, a field, one could say, of intelligence. Very still. We think intelligence is mental noise. And the better you are at mental noise, the more intelligent you are. But that's a very limited view. The true intelligence is very still. And every creative insight comes out of stillness. Whoever is creative in any field must at least occasionally become still. Because nothing creative could ever come otherwise. And there are people who are considered great in this world who are perhaps still 3% of the time, and that's enough for great insights to come. But here we are going beyond 3% here. So to feel that you are not ready, you don't know the answers, is beautiful. It becomes power, spiritual power, when you no longer feel uncomfortable about not feeling ready, no longer feel uncomfortable about not knowing. Then comes great wisdom. And you find yourself speaking, if it's a formal situation, and saying things that you didn't know before. Who is speaking? Stillness is speaking. Consciousness is speaking. I'm not speaking. And yet I am that. The tonight, tomorrow, which is a thought form, the time here, see if you can go into this great renunciation to renounce time, to renounce future, to burn up time, one could almost say, burn up past and future, and just be here as spacious awareness, as presence. Yes, occasionally time will come in. A wave of time will come in, which is a wave of mind. And then it'll be gone. And before the next wave comes, you notice space. And maybe the next wave will wait a little. And even while the wave is there, you might notice suddenly a little bit of space around it. And the wave could come as an emotion from within. It could come as anxious, something anxious about what's going to happen to me. And you notice the emotion and let it be. Accept the isness of this moment within and without. And suddenly there's a little bit of space around the anxiety because you let it be. You allow it to be. Even our anger about some insignificant thing here that isn't right. Something's not quite right how it should be. There's this little stain in the carpet. I didn't come here for that. Maybe a slight exaggeration, but not only a slight exaggeration. How sometimes the mind operates in order to draw you in again and to feel right and righteous and give you a sense of self again. Me against that. With all the things that have happened to me, that life has done to me, surely I need 15 years of psychoanalysis just to see what's there. Just whatever movement is there, it will be some kind of content. Some kind of content, some kind of form, emotional form, thought form. And simply to see it and allow it to be, because the fastest way to space consciousness is to allow the forms that you encounter in the now, nowhere else, to be as they are. So the fastest way to the limitless and formless essence of who you are is not to fight the forms. To fight the forms keeps you trapped yourself in form, because every reactivity, every reaction against any form that arises in your life, within or without, strengthens your own form as the me. That's why the ego loves that fighting movement, that reacting movement, that righteous reactivity, that shouldn't, should he, shouldn't, they shouldn't, either. And so to allow the forms, especially now as we practice intensely here, wherever you go, the forms in your life will have certain limitations. So your room may have certain limitations, the food may have certain limitations, how you feel inside you may have certain limitations. You've come here for inner peace, and why can't I feel that? Well, what is it that you do feel? Well, I feel this turmoil that's been there, it hasn't left me. It was supposed to go because I'm on a retreat here. Okay, what does that feel like? Well, it's this movement. Okay, what do you do with it? I don't know, it should go. Well, is it as it is? Well, of course it is as it is. Well then, all you have to do is accept that it is as it is. Because it is already. It is. That is. Okay. Is it that bad? Well, no. Well, but you can't argue with the fact that it is. And then you notice a little bit of space around the turbulence. And space, you could also call that a little bit of peace around the non-peace. Words are limited. We're using words for something that goes beyond the objects. A little bit of peace around the non-peace, because you accepted the non-peace. And it's a little bit at first. And then you may realize that it is vast. That the peace around the non-peace is vast. and that the non-peace is relatively insignificant. But it wants to be taken very seriously. And this is what you teach. Nothing else you teach. Whenever you meet anybody in any teaching situation, that's what you teach, no matter what form the teaching takes, that ultimately that is the essence. So here, be with what is completely, simply within or without. Just be with that. And so nothing needs to be different from the way it is right now, because it already is. That takes you beyond the seemingly limiting forms in your life. Because that's what form is, the nature of all forms to be limiting. Every thought limits you. Every thought that you think, especially if you identify with it, limits you completely. You're trapped in a tiny little thought form and you think you're speaking the truth. That's how it is. And you've seen a tiny perspective. The totality is vast. You've taken a tiny fragment out of the vastness and said, that's how it is. Every form is limiting. You meet somebody, you have a relationship, that is limiting in some way also, always. And then you don't want any relationships, you live alone, you're very limited there too. No human interaction anymore, very limiting. You can't do anything without encountering limitations somewhere. It doesn't mean that you cannot play around in the world of form and find a nice, beautiful mansion to live in, without expecting to find the limitless, which is ultimately yourself, there. Then playing, it's a play. And improve your life on the level of form is beautiful too, but not expecting something through that it can't give you. So the limitations you find here, the little ones, suddenly it starts raining, you get wet, you feel cold. That feels limiting. You contract. Yeah. Why did I come here? You have a limiting thought. You lie in bed and say, I should be at home, would be more comfortable, and have so many things to deal with there. Why did I come here? Whatever, you encounter limitation. Or you suddenly have a pain in the body as you get up. Allowing whatever form this moment takes to be as it is takes you beyond form in yourself. Not fighting the form. Allowing. So the formless is hidden in the form. People think, I need to get rid of all this to finally find freedom. And you find some other forms, some other limitation. If you're poor now, you might think great wealth will free you, and when you have great wealth, you will find that has its own limitations. You suddenly are a different kind of prisoner. If you seek something there, on the level of form, yes. And then you realize forms are to be accepted as they are now, just this. Not some story in the head about I'm poor, so I have to accept that I'm poor. No. This moment, you're not poor at this moment. You're sitting on a chair. You're breathing. There's a little table. There's a mattress on the floor. And there's a window and a little potted plant. That's the reality of this moment. And perhaps the room is small. And there's 2-3 coins on the table. That's your capital. And that's the, and perhaps the hungry. That's this moment. That's how it is at this moment. It's actually quite beautiful. Even that, when it's fully accepted, this moment, or you're sitting on a park bench. No room anymore around you, just this. Now, if you have an idea in your head, this is what my life has come to, I'm ruined, I'm poor, look at these bastards in their expensive cars. Stories going around the head. Because every story is a search of an identity. If you can condemn these bastards in expensive cars, you have added a little bit to your sense of mind-made identity. Because I'm right and they are wrong. That's how the ego works. No, so it's not accepting I'm ill or accepting that I'm poor or accepting just this moment as it is. Not some idea around this moment. Just this moment. And then enormous things happen when you don't expect anything to happen anymore. That's the end of conditioning. It's amazing. It may be good to keep noble silence for the rest of tonight. Stay just a little while with the empty chair when this form is gone.